down to dunk. This is Luke Dort, and I'm down to Dort.
I'm Josh Giddey, and I'm down to dunk.
Hey, this is Kenny Hustle, and I'm down to dunk.
I'm Darius Baisley, and I'm down to dunk.
I'm Mike Muscala, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Poku, and I'm down to dunk.
I love cereal. Captain Crunch. Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Cracklin Oat Bran.
Oh, I can have these? I'm going to share with my team, but I'm a hog most of them.
Let's talk about this Brooklyn game a little bit, which was quite interesting from a lot of vantage points as a Thunder observer. The Thunder win 130 to 109. Which is an absurd amount of points for this Thunder team to score. Great night from Shea. Shea was incredible, man. He had 33 points on 18 shots. 9 of 10 from the free throw line. Only took 5 threes. He's really started taking a lot less threes. He's been driving a lot. Some of that, I think, is a product of who he's playing. Like, this Nets team was horrific on defense. And then I also just think the Wizards team was horrid too. So like, it's nice that he's had these two games, but it's also against like two very, very bad defensive squads. So that helps him get back on track. Obviously, he could have played poorly, so he didn't. So that's good. So we have that. Josh Giddey had a really nice night too. 19 points, 7 assists, 3 boards. He kind of put this game away, which I thought was interesting because the Nets went on this – you know, mini run in the fourth quarter. You thought, okay, maybe there's a chance that they can get back into the game. And then Josh hits 2 shots in a row, one of them a 3, that completely put the game out of reach, which I thought was just a good sign to see. So, yeah, that was fun. Mamadi Diakite, my guy, one of the most friendly men in the world, back on the squad from he was on the training camp roster. They signed him to a 10-day. Played 10 minutes last night, didn't do much at all, but it's good to see him. Darius Baisley and Mike Muscala kind of carried the team off the bench last night. Both were very, very good. Baisley, in particular, looked really good last night. 16 points, 5 boards, and a block. That was really good to see. So if you have questions, please ask on stage. We'd love to hear from you. Hopefully we get some of the FryPod guys on here. I know Taylor's been trying to get on here. And if not, I'll just keep rambling. Come on, Taylor. Let's see if Taylor can talk on here. Tayshaun, are you there?
Hey, can y'all hear me now?
Yes. What's up, dude?
What's going on? Dude, I couldn't believe, so I was working late last night and then came home and checked the score. And my eyes, like, you know, in those cartoons when their eyes just like pop out of their skulls and they shoot out like,
yeah.
I could not believe this team scored 130 points. I don't care if the defense was bad.
Yeah.
I cannot believe that they scored 130 points. And I watched the highlights and looked at some stuff and it made sense. I mean, it just looked like everyone was just on. They had so much confidence. And I know we texted about it last night, but man, they shot 45 3-point shots. That's got to be the most on the season, right?
The most on the season. It's also the most makes on the season. They shot 20 of 45. They were 44% from 3, which is unbelievable. Yeah.
That is actually unbelievable.
Yeah.
I had to see it. I had to actually look at it and see that it happened in real life.
Yeah.
Josh Giddey taking 11 threes.
Yeah, that's really something. And some of that was Shea trying to get the triple double, honestly. The ball just ended up in Josh's hands a lot. And credit to Josh, like, he's taking the shots, you know. I'm totally cool with him taking as many threes as possible.
I love it, and I feel like that 3-point shot has looked better. Like it just looks a little smoother, and it goes in with it. So it passes the eye test more than it passes like the numbers test.
Yeah.
Because I feel like he's making a lot more than he actually is, which I think is a good sign, right?
Yeah. Oh, I think so. I think just the fact that he's a willing shooter, he's not going to be a good shooter this year. Like, I'm just not counting that on that, banking on that at all. But mm-hmm. if he's a willing shooter and he can change some of that, I think that's very, very important to what he can be as a player, because I think he's already established like this baseline of like, he can be a guy that runs the offense. He's an incredible passer, great rebounder. And if he can actually score the basketball at some level, I mean, that would be just outstanding. Al, what's up?
What's up, guys?
What's up, Al?
Hey, what's up? I was just trying to read the De'Aaron Fox, Ben Simmons story.
Sorry to disturb you.
From Chris Haynes. Yeah. It sent me to the Yahoo main page about the guy who got the heart transplant from a pig.
Oh, yeah. I feel weird.
Yeah, he apparently stabbed 7 guys, and people are upset that he got the heart pig.
Unbelievable. Al, do you have any thoughts on last night's game?
I mean, it was just like a confluence of perfect events to create this amazing game. I mean, Brooklyn, I could not believe how bad they looked. And it wasn't just that Kyrie was not there and Kevin Durant. Like, Claxton not being there was a huge deal.
Sure.
Because there was just, like, nothing going on inside defensively.
Yeah.
And it's been 2 games of this now, because we saw the same thing with Washington. And so it's kind of, like, trying to figure out how much of this is Shea, like, not just turning a corner, but, like, deliberately changing the way he's playing, versus them just running into 2 awful defensive teams inside. So it'll be interesting to see how he keeps this up, because on the one hand, like, I kind of hope he's just gotten a little more confidence from this run. Like, who cares if they're bad defensively? And, you know, when they start playing better teams, we still see this kind of aggressiveness, because it's just a really fun version of Shea to watch when he's looking like this.
And I think that's so he's been playing a little bit more aggressive since like December 1st. He had that really good month in December, and then he had a week or so that he was struggling. But it's clear that what you were saying, Al, like, he's been really trying to play so much more aggressively and score the ball. And when he plays that way and he's scoring the ball, it just opens up so much more. I mean, we talked about how he got the ball to Josh Giddey a bunch last night, because he was trying to get the triple double. But the fact that he can go for that is different than the Shea that we had seen in years prior consistently.
And I'm really excited to see what happens on Saturday, because Saturday they play Cleveland with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley.
Yeah. That
is, like, going from Washington and Brooklyn to those two guys is like 180. And so I'm very interested to see how Shea plays in that type of a game, because the rim protection is just going to be on another level.
Over under 9.5 threes for Shea on Saturday.
9.5?
Yeah.
Under.
Yeah. How many times does he shoot 9.5 threes frequently?
I'm just saying, like, against that defense, like, these guys take what the defense gives them. If you think that Shea is just going to drive to the hoop all night on Cleveland?
Andrew, he is taken more than 9.5 twice this season. You got to lower that over under.
I'm just saying, it's possible.
Andrew, it's actually a good bet to make, because it's happened so few times. You should really put actual money on that.
Even though he just set the odds, he's going to bet with himself. Yeah, because they haven't played Cleveland this year yet, so we don't even have a barometer for what they'll try to do.
Right. Yeah. Let me see how many times he's taken 9 threes in a game. 1, 2, twice all season against the Bucks. He took 12, and against the Lakers, he took 11. So against 2 like big teams, the teams that play big.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be really interesting.
Let's make the bet.
All right. Sign it up.
Sign it
all
up,
right,
everybody.
How much money? $50.
BetMGM.com. Can you make the bet? Can you make the bet? Okay. Let's invite some people on stage to ask some questions. Feel free to direct the question at whoever you'd like. Or just at the group in general. So we're going to start with Chad S. What's up, Chad? Oh, Chad, are you there? No, Chad.
All right.
Classic Chad.
Classic Chad. Chad has actually been in this quite a bit, so I'm going to take him out and then add him later on if he wants to get back in. We'll go to Muhammad. All right, Muhammad, how's it going? You might have a mute button issue.
Going well so far.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes. What's up,
man? Awesome. Man, I just like, I was in a group chat the other day and I was like texting them like, I can't wait to search up Trey Mann tonight on Twitter and see how he embarrasses his defender today. And that was like 30 minutes before he hit that killer crossover and then he steps back and he just drains it. So beautiful. I love watching him play. He's so good. But like, I'm curious, and I do this constant thought experiment on how high is this guy's ceiling? Like, I know he's already an elite space separation, like, generator. Like, how much further can he go based on that skill, and what can he improve on, like, from here, you know? Because he already has, like, a 1% skill. Like, what other player can create separation like this? I really, like, can't even think of one.
Yeah. I mean, that plus the three-point shooting is why the Thunder drafted him. It was just like, hey, we know he can do this. If there's something else, great. If not, like, well, maybe he's just a guy that can get buckets off the bench. I don't know how high his ceiling is, honestly, and I don't think the Thunder do either. I think they drafted him with the intention of kind of making him a bench scorer. But the more I kind of watch him play, the more I kind of want to see him play with guys like Shea and Giddey, just because he can shoot and has some gravity. So, Alex, I don't know what you think about his like ultimate ceiling, but I think that he has a high ceiling. Can he get there is like another question.
Well, you've mentioned to Andrew how you kind of just want to see him have a game where he can just take over. And that's the thing that's been missing, if anything, with Trey's game is like, I don't know if it's a confidence thing or it's probably just the team trying to start him out small and slowly build up. But he hasn't had that kind of like takeover mentality, or we haven't seen it yet. And so I think when projecting his ceiling, if he's really going to be like an elite type of scorer at some point, like you have to see that. And he's not a guy who feels that way so far. But on the flip side, like his playmaking flashes get me really excited too. And
yeah,
it's hard to see how that's going to come in the future with Shea on the court and Giddey on the court. But that's the part that I really want to explore as well, because I think that's another part to his ceiling that I didn't really expect coming into the season.
To me, he kind of plays like this, like a potential sixth man of the year kind of guy. Mm-hmm. They like come off the bench. Okay, he can score. He's got the ball in his hands. He can make plays every now and then. But the way he scores is so flashy and there's so much talent behind that and athleticism behind that. It feels like he could be a really good scorer eventually, you know, if he hits a couple more of those jumpers, those step back jumpers. But also it's kind of funny thinking about, you know, watching him and comparing it to how we talked about Tao last year. Because I think we would watch Tao last year, and especially when Shea was out, and think, okay, this is a guy that could really be something for this team in the future. Hopefully, maybe, you know, backup point guard, something like that. And now with Trey Mann, I'm like, who's Tao?
Yeah.
Yep. Tao is just solid last year. It was even hard to point at, like, what does he do that's good? Like, everything is just kind of solid, like, across the board with Tao. And I still think that there might be, like, a decent player in there, but you know, I think that there's just better players on the roster today, especially at the guard position. So there's really not room to even explore that anymore with him. So yeah, I'm interested to see, like, can he be more than like a Will Barton type of player, who's like a starting level player, off, like better as a backup, you know, come in, get you buckets, maybe, you know, close games for you. Maybe that's the kind of player we're talking about, which would be great. Like, Will Barton's been awesome for the Nuggets. And if you know, Trey Mann can be that kind of player, I mean, that's a steal, you know, where they got him in the draft.
Yeah, I was thinking of someone like Jordan Poole. Because they're about the same height. He's 6'4", 194. Trey Mann is 6'5", 190. And, you know, he's putting up 17, 3, and 3. He's not shooting it great from 3 this year, but, like, that type of the line where he still can be that kind of secondary playmaker for you off the bench. It's not like he's coming in and just scoring. I think someone like that maybe would be – I mean, that'd be awesome if he turned into Jordan Poole this year eventually.
It's hard to believe Trey Mann's 6'5". Like, even the way he plays, like, when he dunks, it's really – it feels shocking that he's dunking and finishing these alley-oops, and you're like, man, that is some athleticism out of a small guy.
I know.
Like, well, he is 6'5".
If you told me he was 6'2", and I just never looked it up, I would have believed it. And I feel like such an idiot. Maybe it's because he's playing, like, next to Josh, and even Shea's big.
Yeah.
He just looks smaller in comparison.
No.
I think he measured at 6'3 and something at the combine.
Oh, really? So is this just lies from Basketball Reference?
I think it might be. I've been in the same room with him a bunch. Like, I did the interview with him at Summer League, and if you would have asked me how tall he was, I would have never, ever said 6'5".
It was like, okay. That was like kind of like the pre-draft hype was like, oh yeah, he gained like 2 inches or 3 inches, like over the summer, yep. Like between his freshman and sophomore year. And then the combine was like, oh, he's not actually 6'5".
Yeah.
Yeah. 6'3¼ was what he measured at the draft combine.
Wow. Well, that's fine. So Russell Westbrook. Great. We got Russell Westbrook again.
Right. Oh, man. Mohammed, thanks for the question. Really appreciate you.
Appreciate you having me. Thank you.
We're going to bring on Trent W. Trent, feel free to ask anybody here a question.
Yeah, dudes. Just a couple offensive questions, really, towards either of you and what you guys think of, like, Mark this year in terms of, you know, when he's been available, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Because last night, like you guys said, I mean, they were just, everybody was on. And I'm wondering if that's just indicative to how Mark wants these guys to play for the remainder of this, you know, process. And is it more likely that people are going to be off than on? Because while I was happy to see last night's result, I don't want to expect that too much, you know?
So. Yeah, I mean, that is, it's definitely the way they want to play. They want to play downhill a lot. They want to play fast. They want to generate a lot of threes. Like, that's how they want to play, ultimately. And this roster is just not conducive to that. Last night was an aberration. Like, that's, they likely will not make 20 threes in a game the rest of the season. You know, that's probably not going to happen. Now it's going to happen, now that I said it right. I know. It'll happen against Cleveland.
Right. It's going to be like a flu, like a back flu, where we have to start making everything.
Right. Exactly. But yeah, I mean, Mark is very involved in the way their offense is run. I mean, he calls a lot of plays from the sidelines, especially to start games. Now when they kind of get into a flow, he will let them go a little bit. But at the start of games, like, he's out there calling sets for them. And definitely when there's like a ball stoppage, he will be up calling different sets for them to run. So he's very, very involved in what they're doing offensively. And he's constantly yelling for them to push. When they get a rebound, Mark is up yelling for them to push. That's a pretty constant thing. Like, he wants them to get into their offense as quickly as possible because he knows that with the limited shooting that they have, you know, the quicker the better with regards to getting into their sets. So, yeah, I think that last night is definitely how they want to play. It's very easy to play that way against a really bad defense. Now, what can they do against one of the better defenses in Cleveland? It'll be really interesting to see the contrast.
Yeah. About you bringing up SGA and the threes, it got me curious. Like, how does that reflect his driving? Like, does he drive less? Or does it even not take away any drives? I'm curious about that, what you guys see.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Cleveland will try to take away the drive from him, and they have the personnel to do so. So I just wonder, as he kind of tries to attack Cleveland's defense, if he's just going to settle for more threes. Also, you know, he hit a quarter three off ball last night, and I think that's something that they'll be looking to do more. As well, is just getting Shea off the ball So I'll be interested to see if maybe they try to do that a little bit more if those lanes are shut down on Saturday.
Do you think this is a game where they start Derek Favors, go back to him?
Oh, gross. Oh, probably.
Or Mamadi.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about him yet.
Yeah. I would guess they would go with Favors over Diakite.
No.
I love Diakite. So.
Yes. Yes. Get him in there. That's yeah. I'm all about it. All right. Yeah. Thanks.
Yep. Thanks, Trent. All right. Let's go to our next question. Let's go to Jeb.
So you think they'll be more likely to sign shooters or a big, like for like free agents, if the Thunder end up like being more like in winning mode in the future?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it will depend on the draft mostly to see where they're at. Because if they draft one of these bigs at the top, like if they end up drafting Chet, and then maybe they keep Darius, maybe they sign Darius to some small extension, then I think it's very unlikely with those two plus JRE. And I mean, they just don't really have a lot of room for a big at that point. So if they are able to get a big at the top of the draft, I think that changes things. If they fall back in the draft and there's not as many bigs in that range that I think you'd want, maybe they draft a shooter, then perhaps they might look on the market for somebody. Or, I mean, there's also a chance they just keep Derek Favors around for another season. You know, he's got another year left on his deal. There's a chance that he's just here again, that we get, you know, 2 years of giant Dort, which is totally fine. But my guess is that free agency, they will not be doing much. I would guess that they will acquire meaningful players via the draft or through trade. And then, you know, the times that we've seen press the active in free agency is typically when they're going for it. So I would say that we're still years away from them being free agent players.
So no Caron Butler type player coming in.
Oh my gosh. I hope that we never have to even talk about a Caron Butler type of player, you know, ever again, because we were looking for somebody that could come in and change the team. And it was very bad. Very, very bad.
Okay. All right. So, all right. One more thing. So I posted on the Thunder subreddit not too long ago, a trade, and I got absolutely destroyed, you know, as you do when you post trades. I heard you guys, you and Alex talking about Patrick Williams and how you thought it'd be like a huge price for him. I think that like if we were to trade like Kenrich, Favors and Bazley, I would think Bazley would be really good on in a role like that. And those players and like a few decent picks, it's possible. But then again, you know, that argument gets destroyed when you consider Detroit and, you know, if they traded Grant for Williams.
Yeah, that's the holdup for me as well. Like if they even wanted Jeremy Grant for what they need right now, that's just like such a bigger and better upgrade than really anything OKC can offer them. Like obviously we can offer a ton of picks. We can offer those players you mentioned, but if they're trying to win the championship this year, or they like really want to be a serious contender, like Jeremy Grant is like a way better option. And I still don't think they're going to do that. So I think it would be just a huge price for them to give up on Patrick Williams.
Yeah. I mean, if the Thunder were trying to get on Patrick Williams, I think that the conversations would start with Dort, honestly.
Yeah.
I think like that would be,
I'd still be shocked if Dort got traded. Like, I heard the argument you guys were making that, you know, with his contract and everything, but still just, like, what he, like, means to the team and, you know, like, his relationship with Shai. That too.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to trade him either. I would be surprised by it. However, you know, Presti around these times is going to make a decision on a guy within the next year or so. We'll know what the decision is on Dort, would be my guess. So, you know, he traded Jeff Green once upon a time, who was really good friends with KD. You know,
And at the time, there was more of a logjam of scoring and stuff like that going on. So the Thunder don't have those problems today. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. But, yeah, I mean, Patrick Williams would be great here, but I just don't think Thunder have the juice unless we're talking Dort and multiple firsts probably.
Yeah, cool. All right, nice talking.
Right. Yep, thanks, Chad. Let's bring on Chad S. Chad, what's up? Oh, no. Are we having more Chad issues?
Is this Luke's brother just trolling us?
No, I think this is another Chad.
All right. Can you hear me now?
There he is. What's up, Chad?
All right. Sorry about that, guys. First off, happy Friday to all you guys. My question's for everyone. Given that the Clippers pick is looking like it's probably going to rapidly start descending or ascending in the reverse standings, I guess you could say. Hypothetically speaking, if, say, we get, like, the 3 pick and, you know, 5-8 or whatever, do you try to move up and trade up to get to 1 or 2 to get either, you know, your pick of Chet or Paolo, or do you stay at 3 and then or stay at those 2 picks?
I think it all depends where that first pick is. Like, if it really is at 3, I'd probably just stay there and have the extra top 10 pick, because it, you know, listening to Sam Bassini, like, there's so much difference in opinion on how people would rank the top 3 or even the top 4. There's not like the obvious automatic guy that everyone's like, okay, it's definitely Zion's going number 1, and then, you know, we can debate number 2 or whatever. So unless there's someone that, unless they think Chet is just like a generational player, I personally would just rather stay at 3 and have the extra top 10 pick to take someone else.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that, I mean, depending on who it is that drops, you're going to get one of the bigs probably. And that really fills what the Thunder need from any of them, honestly. Like, I would not be upset if they got any of the 3. And then you get your wild card. You know, Presti valued Josh Giddey a lot higher than a lot of other people did, or at least how, you know, draft Twitter valued Josh Giddey. So maybe there's another player in this next draft around like the 8, you know, 8-10 or wherever, that Presti's just like, no, I think that guy's a lot better. And, you know, Sam has been right a lot of times within the top 10. So I'll be interested. I'd just rather have Presti take 2 swings, I guess, would be my argument. Unless he really truly believes, like Alex said, that somebody is generational that would go number 1. Then it would be worth it to do so, but still, I'd probably rather take 2 swings.
And this is the year where you maybe could make that kind of trade up, because like next year, if they're at 3 and it's Wembanyama and like Scoot at 1-2, like, I bet you couldn't even do that trade. Like, even if you threw an extra first you're probably not going to be able to get up there. So you probably could do that trade this year, but we just don't know if they feel that way about any of these top guys.
Yeah. I guess Presti does believe that, you know, Paolo or Chet is the guy, and, you know, you're just right outside of that range to get him. Do you sacrifice the sweetener pick and just go and get your guy, given that, you know, for one, we have God, you know, only knows how many assets. It's just kind of a interesting hypothetical that I've been wondering, because it's kind of, to me, I feel like both guys are kind of like in between. Yeah, they're not quite that generational player where, like, you do anything to get them. And even then, like Alex said, you know, no one's probably going to give them up if they were that. But, you know, they still have, you know, unique possibilities and becoming like a really great player and fitting with the team as well. Just because both guys, I think, would fit perfectly with Josh and Shea and just really be that unlocking piece for them. And, you know, mm-hmm. if you miss out on them, then, you know, it's kind of like, okay, well, should you go get him, or, you know, just be happy with 2 picks. So,
Chad, let me ask you something. What do you have against Jabari Smith?
You know, I know a lot of people are really high on him, and people are, you know, even talking about going number one. I honestly just haven't really looked that much into him yet. I've looked into both Chet and Paulo. I'm more of a Banchero guy myself, just what I've seen, you know, just, you know, off of YouTube and everything. Yeah, but I haven't really looked into Smith much at this point.
Okay, so you want to fight him. Andrew, Alex, who do you guys like the most right now? Out of those three.
Chet. I've always been a Chet guy. Always will be.
Chet kind of looks like a Stretch Armstrong version of you.
Thank you.
That is wildly accurate, for sure.
That's probably why I like him.
I'm a big Jabari Smith guy. I just like the shooting. I mean, I'm just at this point, after watching this team play and looking at like some of the numbers behind the squad, it's just like so evident that they play so much better when guys like Kendrick Williams and Mike Muscala are in the game. And a lot of it is because they provide some level of shooting. So just adding somebody that's a knockdown shooter that the defense has to worry about, I think is very important. However, I do really like Chet as well. And I do like Paulo. Like, I'm not so high on Jabari Smith to where I'm like, man, like, this is Jabari Smith or bust. It's like, if we can get in the top three, then I will just be elated, is how I'll feel, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel that way as well. I would not be disappointed with that.
I guess to take the exercise a little bit further, unless, you know, you want to move on, if you get in like four or five and then, you know, six to eight range, do you move up to get in the top three?
Yes.
Yes, okay. And hopefully a team in that gets in the top three, like, is good with their bigs so that it actually seems feasible. Because
Cleveland. Granted, Cleveland probably is going to make the playoffs this year. So,
right.
Yeah, actually, I was going to look at, like, are there any teams that, like, definitely don't need a big? I guess there's really not.
Well, even if you're Cleveland, wouldn't you still want one of these guys?
No! They get a fourth seven-footer?
Yeah, that's what they're going to do, man.
I mean,
no, they would absolutely take Jaden Ivey. Jaden Ivey would be awesome.
Yeah, he would be.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, like, what does Orlando think of their big guys? Like, do they think highly of any of them enough?
Oh, Andrew, a Bamba, you can get him for a first. Are you interested? A lot of people talking about that.
No.
All right.
Not even lottery protected or, you know, late lottery protected?
Probably not. I think that Bamba will be available on the market relatively soon. And if you really want him, I think you can get him in another way.
So, I'm really indifferent towards Mo Bamba, so
I'm not willing to give him a first round pick for a guy for a failed lottery guy. You know, I mean, the Thunder did that with Dion Waiters years ago, and we all love Dion for lots of reasons.
Yeah, we all.
But it was not a good trade, and they did the same thing for Enes Kanter. And ultimately, like, they ended up doing like good things with the Kanter contract itself, is that they signed it and then they were able to move it along and turn it into something. Like, that's great. But the Kanter deal ultimately was not a very good trade. So what do you pay Mo Bamba? What do you, like, the first, like, I don't know. Like, I'm just kind of, and especially because there's so many good bigs in this draft, I'm just like, don't do that now. Maybe if you came away from the draft and you came away with two guards in the top 10 and you're like, okay, like, if they would take like the Suns pick for Bamba, like, whatever, you know, is kind of how I'd feel.
Right. Yeah. That's the only pick that I'd be willing to part with, like the Suns pick or something like that, you know, late first, just to take a flyer, just because, I mean, if I recall correctly, this is his first season where he's actually started to play and look good, like, you know, and not to mention it's probably come down to earth since early start of the season. So, yeah, I could care less either way on Mo Bamba. And like you said, you know, with the the high picks being, you know, all bigs, you know, it's better to take those if you, you know, get in that range. So,
mm-hmm. like, I'd rather have Jalen Duren than Bamba, you know, and if you could get him, like, if the draft ends up going, if the lottery goes really poorly, like, they could still end up with Jalen Duren and, like, Patrick Baldwin Jr. or Jaden Ivey or somebody like that, which still isn't, like, horrific, but it's not ideal. But I would still rather do that than trade a first for Bamba. I mean, it says something that he has played and played well in spots, and the Magic are still like, we'd rather not, you know?
Yeah,
like that's exactly. That's concerning to me. That's why I would just – that's why I just want to stay away. All right. Thank you, Chad. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend, dude.
Yeah, you guys do the same.
Bye. I got to go to a meeting. See you guys later.
Okay. See you, Al.
Bye.
Let's answer a couple more questions. Go to Jason W. Jason.
Sorry about that. I had to take you guys off mute. So this might be kind of a dumb question, but everywhere I look for this answer, I'm having trouble. So do we have our first round pick this year? Because everywhere I look, it says that we don't own our own first round pick.
So the pick is lottery protected.
Okay.
If the Thunder somehow miraculously made the playoffs, they would lose the pick.
Okay.
Yeah. They traded that in the Dennis Schroeder trade to Atlanta and made it lottery protected. So
okay.
That's the deal with that. They will have their pick for this
year. They will. So you, yes. This year?
Yes. Yes.
Unless they make the playoffs, Andrew.
Unless yeah. they make the playoffs. If no, they make okay. the playoffs, they lose the pick. So.
Yeah. All right. That's not. Yeah. Thank you so much. I like Sports Illustrated. If you just look it up, it doesn't even mention that. It just straight up says like we don't own our first round pick. And I'm like, how is that possible? So.
Yeah, that's bad coverage. Like that's yeah, straight up. Right. Like it's just straight up. We don't care about the Thunder, and we're just gonna let that out there. But if you
right.
if you follow the Thunder, you care about the Thunder. And you care about the coverage of the Thunder, you would definitely have in there that it's top 14 protected, that the Thunder will have the pick unless they make the playoffs. So yeah,
and if you care, you only get your information from The Athletic. You don't get it from anywhere else.
Right. Yeah, no, I had a little trouble searching, but that's why I hopped on actually. I just have one last question. It's pretty quick. What is Josh Giddey's ceiling? I don't see him being like this massive game breaker. Like he's like pretty good at all. Like he's a really good passer. I don't know about elite yet, but really good at that. I don't know. Like, is he like, what's his ceiling in terms of like, I don't think he's amazing at anything. He's a really good player. I just don't know where his ceiling.
Okay, Sean.
I don't know what his ceiling is, but I would say he is a really great passer already. I would say that is an elite skill he has. I think something he has to work on is not picking up his dribble and, you know, picking spots where he's going to go. Cause right now he's good at kind of wriggling through and getting around. And then his elite passing skill kind of gets him out of bad decisions more than the other way around. So I think if he just kind of works on these pick and rolls, where's my spot? Okay. I know where these guys are going to be. Then I think that is there. I think that's there. And I don't know what his ceiling would be either, because it's hard to compare him to a lot of players. If the 3-point shooting, so since he's come back from being in health and safety protocols, he's shot 39% on 33 threes.
Yeah.
So if that is like real, and that looks to be, you know, hopefully a little bit more real than what we were hoping with Dort, then, I mean, given his size and his passing ability, and even if his handling and, you know, kind of holding on to the ball a little bit better gets better, then I think he could be really, really good, especially next to some, you know, other weirdo players like SGA and whoever else we get in this draft. It's like if your top three guys are just weirdos, it's hard to gauge what that could be or compare to other players.
Yeah. I think he actually has a pretty high ceiling because he does have a baseline of what he's going to be, which is like a good passer, a good rebounder. The dude is so strong for his age. I mean, you have to remember, like, this is a teenager that will get stronger and will fill out as his career goes on. And he plays guard. So this is a 6'8" guard, like power guard, that can get in and defend multiple positions because of his size and strength. So I think that they can be pretty versatile with him. The only thing he's not going to be able to be is a point of attack defender, but I think he's going to be strong enough and smart enough to guard guys that are bigger. So like bigger wings, bigger forwards. I think eventually he will guard those kind of guys. And then like he can get out on the break and create so much. He just sees the floor differently than almost really any player in Thunder history, which sounds kind of crazy with the amount of players that we've had. Like Chris Paul is obviously the guy that's been better than him. But like that's like he's definitely probably top three passers already, and we've only seen half a season of him. I think it's a slam dunk that he's one of the best passers in Thunder history. So I think that his ceiling is pretty high. It will all hinge on the shot. It's all about the shot from here. If he can score and be reliable and like put up 17 a night with consistency and with like decent, you know, shooting numbers, then we're talking about a guy that could be like a top 40 guy in the NBA. Like he's got that kind of ceiling and maybe even could be better than that. So it's so hard to define ceilings with guys, especially guys that don't have elite athleticism. But he does have elite vision and is an elite rebounder for his position. So I'm just interested to see where it goes. But again, I think he's going to be a starting level player no matter what happens with his shot. But if his shot improves over the next few years, then we're talking about a guy that has a pretty high ceiling as a player.
So with that being said, then if he follows that trajectory, do you think the next most important, or just the next piece, I guess, you know, if you have Giddy, SGA, and then do you think a three, I know the NBA is kind of shifting from the traditional 1-5, but I feel like in this NBA, you need that three guard who can guard, you know, the Kawhis, the Giannis, the KD, et cetera. Like, do you think, you know, that is, I know you draft the best, or I don't know, depending on Sam's philosophy, you draft the best player, but do you think the three guard is the biggest need then if, you know, those are your 1 and 2 guards?
I think the biggest need is shooting. No matter what, I think if you can get it from, like Jabari Smith is a guy we talked a lot about. Like he's a 4. So if he, like, that's fine. Like I don't really care where you get it from, whether if it's the wing or from even the center position. I don't care where it is. But I think obviously you're going to need a wing defender. I think you can find wing defenders. I think you can find guys that can do that. Not that like Aaron Wiggins is going to be that guy, but an Aaron Wiggins type of guy that is a low usage, you know, just kind of do the dirty work, take open shots. Like, it doesn't have to be Aaron, but maybe it could be, that plays on the wing next to these guys. Because I do think if you got a big that could take a lot of possessions and carry the offense for portions of the game, that it might be overall a better fit next to those guys, because they need, what they need now is an elite play finisher, because they have two really good creators. And now, they find themselves in this position where it's either Shea generating his own points, or it's Giddy or Shea generating points for guys that are highly inefficient. So if they can get a good play finisher, then I think that you start to have the makings of a real team.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go Jacob K. Next. Jacob K. You are on the show.
Hey, what's up, dudes?
Hey, is this Jacob
Niffin? What's up?
That it is Jacob Niffin.
What's up, man?
How you doing? What's up, man?
How are you?
Good.
You guys doing all right?
Yep. Yeah.
So, great. So two things. First one is the short one. Andrew, I believe that you talked on a recent episode about Bobby Marks' proposed trade for the Thunder to get Cam Reddish, which included the Clippers pick. Yeah. Now seeing what Reddish actually went for, is it not crazy to think how preposterous that idea was?
Oh my God, I didn't see that.
I was so mad about it from the point that I read it from. I was like, this is so bad. There's just no way the Thunder would ever do that.
I think his proposed trade was two firsts, and was it Kenrich, I think? And one of the firsts was the Clippers pick. And now seeing what Cam's value actually was, just kind of mind-blowing that was the proposed trade on ESPN.com.
Dear Lord.
It's crazy. Sometimes there's a gap between the way that people think about basketball on Twitter and then what is actually happening within the league. And Cam Reddish is like the poster child of this, because I think if you ask a lot of executives about Cam, they'd be like, yeah, he's just not very good. You know, I think that would be the response you get. But you ask on NBA Twitter, people are like, oh, the potential, he can do this, he can do that. And some of it comes from the fact that he's one of the more respected guys, like out of high school. Like everybody thought that he was going to be a star out of high school. They had a really kind of rough year at Duke. And then obviously we saw what he's done with the Hawks, and it just hasn't been very good. But people still tend to believe in him on Twitter. But had the Thunder had any interest at all, they had the juice to go get him. You know, they could have used if they really, really believed in him, they could have used the Clippers pick. If they still just kind of believed in him, they have a bevy of picks that they could have said, hey, we have that. We can meet your asking price. It won't be that difficult for us, and we won't even miss the pick. But I mean, it's obvious the Thunder did not have interest in him because he's not on the Thunder.
Totally agree. The other thing I wanted to ask, speaking of picks, the Thunder have between the 2022, 2023, and 2024 draft something like 12 first rounders. We talk a lot about how consolidation is eventually going to happen. You can't roster all those guys, but that may happen sooner than later. And they have to, I mean, you're not going to consolidate 12 picks down to three or four. So who are some people that are currently on this roster that maybe we haven't talked a lot about, but may, for lack of a better term, end up being victims of the consolidation over the next, I don't know, 8 to 16.
Yeah. Well, Jacob, I mean, have you considered the idea that maybe they want to draft a B team and they're going to introduce that in the next CBA?
The blue.
Yeah, that maybe they have, maybe there's going to be a Thunder B team or a JV, and they're going to switch them out. You know, okay, this team's in health and safety protocols today. Let's bring in the B team.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. That's a possibility. That is totally realistic.
When Sam Presti said, the arrival to the playoffs will be, an arrival, not an appearance, he was actually talking about the G League.
That's right. Exactly.
Right. Yes.
I would say anybody outside of SGA, Lou, and Giddy, I think, are on the table, and Lou's not off the table. I'd say Baisley, Jeremiah could be one of these guys. I think Aaron Wiggins could be one of these guys. I think Trey is more toward the top because of what he's shown this year, but I wouldn't be surprised if Trey wasn't a part of this team in 3 years. I think Poku is without a doubt one of those guys that they can move on from. I really think the roster will be incredibly fluid, and we'll be maybe even embarrassed of some of the takes that we've had on both of our podcasts about stuff that we've said about some of these guys. Because we just don't know. I mean, they could draft two bigs in this next draft, and they could bench Jeremiah. And I think Jeremiah is good. I think he's had a good season, but is it a guarantee that he has, you know, that he's going to play 20 minutes a game next year? I wouldn't guarantee that at all. You know, he's played 22.8 minutes per game this year. Is he going to do that again next year? I mean, it's likely that the answer is no. You know, like, that's totally possible. So I would say, if you want to be excited about guys, be excited about Shane and Josh. But beyond that, I would say, you know, guard your heart. It would be my advice on that, because I just don't know that there's guarantees for anybody else, because I think those are the only guys that have shown that they really, really belong. And I think Dort's done that too, but you know, everybody else, you know, has shown either flashes or potential, and that's really just about it, you know. And then we have like the whole like Kenrich conversation. You know, will Kenrich stick around? I mean, it's very possible that he does. I think that he's beloved by the organization. I think that he feels the same way.
about the city and the team and everything. So, you know, those guys are a little bit different when it comes to talking about this. But as far as like young guys go, it's Josh and it's Shea, and then it's everybody else.
So if we were to put the over under at like 4.5 of the 14 current full contract players on this team being here 24 months from now, would you go over?
Oh boy. I would, I mean, 4 is a pretty good number. So I guess I would say if it's 4.5, I might even say under, because I do think, especially with this next draft, the possibility of getting two guys in the top 12. Okay, well, there's two of your guys, right? And then you have another first rounder. And then the next draft, which is supposed to be a really good draft, you're going to have multiple. I mean, I just don't think it's going to be that hard to push some of these guys out, you know, over the next
cross off some names year. Then. Let's call it. Start crossing the names off, both of you. I'm not saying anything.
Come on, Taylor.
Say it.
Maybe that's a good segment. That's actually a good segment for another time. We still have a lot of people asking to be on stage. Really appreciate you guys joining. We're going to call it here. Thanks so much for listening and joining the live room. This will also be a podcast. So if you have joined the live room, you will be on the pod that will be released later on today. Thanks so much for joining, and we'll talk to you guys again next time.
Bye.